Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who's just had a very important moment with his son. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, London. All of London is in the theatre. It's incredible. There's so many people in here. It's great. Hello to everyone at home watching on the live stream as well. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I was hanging out with the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air the other day. I just said West Philadelphia wasn't as good as East Philadelphia. He slapped me. Anyway, he calls it Rahalastapa. We're recording this the day after the Oscars for people at home. Is it okay to punch a comedian? Is it all right to give him a slap if he offends you? Anyone wants to give it a try, come on up. I'm not keeping my hands behind my back. Is it okay for a past transgression? We might sell more tickets, might we? So anyone who's got a problem with anything I've ever said in the past, come up and smack me in the face. Look, it's been a lovely weekend. I've been away in Lowestoft. Yeah, it's better than it sounds. We went up to Southwold and we went for a long walk and had lunch from this long walk back. And we really needed a wee before we drove home. And so I took my son to the loo. And he's just started standing up to wee. He's 4 years old and he's not 28 years old. And I was really desperate to go, so I started going first. And then he just joined in and started going at the same time. It's the first time we've ever kind of crossed streams. It's a big moment it's a significant day. It's better than, giving him a key to his car or, him winning a Nobel Prize. You're both weeing at the same time. It doesn't happen for very long. That's the thing, is it? It doesn't happen. I probably will never do that again with my own dad. I mean, if you're listening, Dad, I'm prepared to give it a go. I'm not sure he can wee standing up anymore anyway. But that self-consciousness will kick in and make him think it's weird to wee standing next to your dad who's also weeing. But he's wrong. It's not weird. It's normal. Also, it's a good way to save water as well because we only need to flush once. We're saving the planet. It's a bonding moment with my son. I don't know if it's as much a bonding moment with my daughter, though. You'd have to kind of be very careful with the positioning and the accuracy, which I do not think at this stage of my life I would be up for. Rather than the bonding moment, it could turn into quite a mentally scarring encounter requiring years of therapy. Lowestoft was nice. There was a kind of poetic moment. There's a charity shop on the high street as we walked down to get our our breakfast on Saturday, and there was a mobility scooter, a second-hand mobility scooter in the window of the charity shop, which is like, just tells a whole story, isn't it, just by itself there. One day you'll be too old to move, and then one day you'll be dead, and your mobility scooter. I've got a feeling that mobility scooter's back in the window of that charity shop every couple of months. Someone buys it, gives it. They should, you know, it's kind of quite, like, oh, it's gone, oh, it's back again. It's a moment of hope followed by a moment of despair. And they should rent it out by the hour, I think. That would be a more efficient way. Good old Lowestoft. It's the mobility scooter capital of the world, and why not? Before we crack on, I would like to thank Kickstarter backer Joanna Seymour. And I have to say, happy year-long 50th birthday to her. She's so young, Joanna Seymour. I wish I was 50 again. Why did I complain? Right. My guest this week, if she's finished her phone call backstage, we're about to find out. She's probably best known as being the writer of two episodes of Young Dracula. Then we didn't hear anything from her again, did we? What's she been up to? What's she been up to since that? It was so good, those two episodes of Young Dracula. Ladies and gentlemen, stepping in at the last moment like a hero, will you please welcome Deborah Frances White, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is. Hopefully, there she is. Hooray, she's here. It's Deborah Frances White. Come in. Sit down. Look at this massively full jug of water. This is an accident waiting to happen. I'll pour you some water, just in case you want it with your...
Thank you so much. Drink. That's an absolute delight.
How are you?
I'm very well, but these aren't merch that people can buy, because I was going to say, you should buy this mug, but you can't, because it says, I was a guest on Rilla Histopa, and all I got was this lousy mug.
Yeah.
So this is unbuyable merch.
It is. You have to become a guest on Rilla Histopa.
But if I were to auction it off
to
somebody here and, like, give the money to Ukraine or something, someone could have one without being a guest.
Yeah, they could.
I'm not saying I'm definitely doing that, but now I've said Ukraine, I kind of have to. It's very awful. Otherwise, what a terrible person I am. So I could auction off this mug. Does anyone want this mug that implies they've been a guest when they haven't? Because you could make up a story. And in fact, what I could do, and this is me taking over your show, Richard, yeah. I'm so sorry.
Not like you, Deborah.
I'm a terrible person. People hate me. I could, later in the show, do it in a way where you get to be a mini guest for like 3 minutes or something like that.
Blimey.
Take some questions. Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah, do what you like.
And then they could have the mug,
yeah.
But it would have to be auctioned off, I think.
Okay.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah, we're allowed to do it.
Okay, well, let's not
it
do
might
it.
Be, it might be an embarrassingly small amount of money. That's what I'm worried about.
Listen, not if we let the live streamers in on the
No, that's true. The gig. Then they've got to come down to the theatre for their 3 minutes of interview.
Live streamers, listen, we'll figure out a way to make you... We will send you emergency questions and you will just type back answers.
We can see. They're not as valuable as I am the host of Rilla Histopa and all I have is this lousy mug. That's
yes, that's really valuable. Yeah, that's,
one that says I'm on the crew. I was on the crew of Rilla Histopa. And all I got. So those are the ones you can probably buy from the bar. The bar staff have them. I think they'll sell them for £20. No problem. How was that writing on Young Dracula?
Oh. Good times. children's television, that's where the money is, that's for sure. I wrote two episodes, but I co-wrote with a writer called Philippa Waller, who we used to write a lot together back in the day. She's fantastic. She's now got a company called 4D Human Being, where she helps you be a better person. If anyone feels they need to be a better person, you, sir? No? Okay.
These people are as good as they're going to get, which is not saying a lot.
Oh, if anyone's feeling a bit 3D.
They've reached the pinnacle.
If you think they've peaked. Okay. listen, if any of you have more faith in yourself than Richard Herring has in you, you feel free to speak up. Philippa did most of the writing on those episodes, I think.
Okay.
Over the years, you know, it pans out, doesn't it? You write a bit more, they write a bit more.
Is young Dracula before he becomes a vampire, though? Because surely old Dracula is dead Dracula.
Have you seen Harry Potter? It's that.
Okay.
Only Dracula's.
Okay. So what? Is it like a school for Draculas? They become Draculas once they're bitten and they're dead, right? They don't go to school and go, oh, I must learn how to be a Dracula.
Oh, that's actually a great point. you've really undone that whole show. Yeah. That format's fucked.
Yeah.
If young Dracula, if you're watching and that show's still going, you need to think on this.
Draculas don't age. That you, a Dracula is the same age as when it... That's the whole point of being a Dracula.
Can I just suggest
yeah.
the Dracula is the name of a vampire?
It is.
I don't think you get, like, plural Draculas.
I think it is. I'm going to... It's like Shrek's. It's the same as Shrek's. Works like a Shrek.
That's like calling wizards potters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like you don't just become a potter, you know. Then that sounds like...
It's confusing because, you know, that's a different job. So you can't call wizards potters because people go, what, I'm a potter? I go, okay, make me a pot. Well, I can do because I'm a wizard.
What about ghosts who are also potters?
It's a good question. The second best ghost-based joke question I've been asked this month. I'm glad about that, young Dracula. So, from The Guilty Feminist, you've been doing it a few years. Yep. Have you achieved equality yet with all your work?
I'll be perfectly frank with you. I don't think I've been as successful at feminism as everyone hoped I would be.
Right.
And the gender equality gap still exists.
Yeah.
The crowd looked disappointed to hear this news.
I'm disappointed. I've been doing all I can to drag the average down for guys. I've been as incompetent and mediocre as I could possibly be.
You've done and yet still so we're doing, well.
Still, I guess it's the mediocrity is what we've... That's our brand, isn't it, men?
Listen, you do your bit... Every International Women's Day, you get online and you say, when's International Men's Day? Oh, November 19th. You don't say, when's International Men's Day, to be fair.
No.
You all know Richard does this, yeah? Does anyone not
they
know
do.
About
Although
this?
I've stopped doing it, Deborah.
No, you do. I saw you doing it, but you said you stopped.
I do a little nod. I give it a little nod.
You said you stopped.
Yeah.
And then you started again.
It's hard to give up. Let's talk about... I've been listening to The Guilty Feminist, which I do on and off. Because I know enough about feminism, I'm fine. I just need a little top up every now and again.
He does his bit every year.
Just a little top up.
And that's... He doesn't need anymore. He doesn't need anymore. If every man pulled their weight on one day of the year, we wouldn't need feminism. He's picked a day, although he has, as he said, given up.
Yeah.
And that's disappointing for feminists everywhere. Because we finally get a man on board, and then he does it for a few years, and he goes, this is really hard. Yeah, no shit. Yeah. I don't have the option to give up, Richard. I get out of bed a woman every day of the week. Yeah. I wish I could give up being abused on the internet and fighting for equality, but I haven't got that luxury.
It is, it's true. That it's a tiny window. Though, to be fair, I get abused by feminists as well, so I get the double...
Yeah, who doesn't?
I suppose you do. The problem with feminists...
Have you heard my podcast?
It's got quite... I wasn't going to talk about this straight away, but it has become quite a fractured movement in some ways, hasn't it?
I mean, everything's become a fractured movement because the internet encourages small communities to band behind very, very simple ideas and argue about them with completely... with a hatred of nuance that is a phenomenon of the modern world. And then we go, well, if you liked that person now, if you like their tweet, you're part of their gang. And it escalates in a way that I think is unhelpful. And my mission is to get conversations offline into rooms where people can see each other's eyes, or at least onto Zooms. I don't think it's healthy or helpful. And I already know people are tweeting about this. If this goes into the podcast, people are going, but what you don't understand is yada, 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 yada. So I've learned to live with a certain amount of... I don't want to use this word because people don't like this word, so I'm going to try and say community flag waving. Certain amount of community flag waving and just going, you know, I will do my best to have bridge building conversations where I can. I'll always build a bridge to you, Richard, should you call me up and say, there's clear blue water between us. Have you got any bridge building equipment? I'll be like, yep, I'm there with my bridge.
Well, it did used to be like that in the old days. We could disagree and, you know, we could have a conversation and we might persuade each other one way or the other.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. But I still have those conversations, but I just have them offline.
Yeah,
I build bridges all the time. And I have been with diehard men who were like, I hate the Me Too movement. You are all destroying the modern world. I can't so much smile as a woman now without going to jail, even though they're in the middle of the BAFTAs. And I'm like, okay, here, let me build a bridge to you. And so I give so much ground that I find if I build the whole bridge, they will often put one or two feet on it. They'll put a foot on my bridge and I might put another one on. And then retreat. But I feel like you stood on my bridge then, didn't you? Stood on my bridge.
Yeah. Well, I think that is a lot of what it's about, and that's what you are very good at, and that's what the podcast is very good at as well, I think, is having the proper conversations and in a way that Twitter isn't.
Oh, Twitter's a vile cesspit. But on the... I mean, I do think there are... If someone's humanity or identity is being questioned, I don't expect that person to build a bridge. But if I'm being an ally, I think my job is to build a bridge. And I often see people on Twitter just going for people in a way... And I'm like, you must have only learnt this in the last 2 years yourself. So when I see white people going after other white people going, yeah, blah, 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 because they've, you know, if they're being actively racist, that's one thing. But if they're being kind of, they haven't used the right word and they're saying they're being a bit defensive, and I see them going after them with pitchforks, I'm like, I know I only learned this in 2016. And I'm a bit ahead of the curve. So I don't reckon you learned it before 2016. So in 2015, you were saying the same thing as this person. Why are you going after them with a pitchfork just to be right? Surely, like my feeling is, if I meet someone who's racist, as an ally, it's my job to leave them no more racist than I found them. And what I can't do is whip them up into a passively, like thoughtlessly, surely it's the same for everyone now, thoughtlessly racist person. They're stating a racist position that I can see is a position that makes life harder for black and brown people. It's my job. I'm not emotionally affected by that issue. I might feel, but I'm not personally emotionally affected. I might feel emotional about it, but it's my job to get them to be a little bit, to shift their position a little bit, so that if that day they get on a bus where there are black and brown people, they're a bit nicer, not a bit nastier, because they've just had a big kick about fight on the internet and they feel I've been punched up. And that's, to me, the problem with modern allyship is it takes time, it takes patience. Sometimes it's very difficult to do it, but that's your job if you want to be an ally. Otherwise, walk on by. Don't stir that nest.
But some people just want the fight. Some people want to feel in that privileged position. You know, it's like you see it, people going, oh, that person 10 years ago said this. But if they're now saying the thing you want them to say, what do you want? You know, that now they're being a hypocrite because they've changed their mind. But if you wanting people to change their mind...
100%.
Once they've changed their mind, that's good. Apologise.
Otherwise, what are we trying to do?
Yeah.
Are we trying to win people over so our team is of inclusive... progressive people who make the world nicer for people who are not members of the dominant group? If we've got to be, what are we going for? Are we going to just punish those people, or are we going to make our team bigger and make the world better?
Yeah,
that's the question. I think people just love being right so much. It is fun to be right, don't get me wrong. A lot of time I think what the guilty feminist is we all come together, have a great deal of fun being right together. Wasn't that a great night? Off we fuck. And I think it's best when we're thinking about how do we make the world a better place.
Yeah.
And sometimes that means being patient, having patient conversations with people who are not at base camp for where you are.
Yeah,
and that's why I've come to talk to you tonight, Richard.
Good. Well, if you can change my racism and sexism, that would be terrific, because just at the moment I love being racist and sexist. So maybe after the podcast I'll regret that.
Richard Herring is being ironic. I just need to state that.
But, you know, I think it's true that, you know, if you go back to the 1980s, I was racist and sexist and homophobic, but I'm not anymore.
But were you passively those things?
I mean, yeah. I mean, I was a child who didn't know anything about anything. I wasn't affecting anything, I don't think. But you were
saying things thoughtlessly, or
Certainly, if you read my diary, I was saying things to my diary that were horrible. Because you know, you don't know. You know, I was an idiot. I was a kid. That's why people pick up something someone's tweeted when they're 16. You go, didn't you have a diary? Didn't you? You know, if you'd put your diary on the internet, you'd be in as much trouble as this. So you say things for effect. You say things because you don't understand.
Or shock value or something. Yeah, shock value. Or, you know,
and also in the 1980s, society's values were
horrible.
Fucked up.
Yeah.
So you know, it's. I think it's understanding that and.
Just to be clear, this is not a Liam Neeson moment from you. It's just more like, oh, I was saying a shock joke or something like that.
I think everybody in the 1980s, everybody was just horrible.
Everyone was horrible in the 1980s. Anyone here alive in the 80s? Just give us a cheer if you were alive in the 80s. Just give us a cheer if you now look back on some of the things you said, thought and did with some measure of horror. Just give us a cheer if you don't regret anything you did or said or thought in the 80s. Nobody, no one from the 80s is spotless.
And I would hope any teenager would have, you know, would have said something that they now regret. Or any person would have said, you know, there are things that I've said 5 years ago, I think, oh, I wish I hadn't said that.
I wish we had a DeLorean and we could go back to good old 1985 and just see what Richard Herring was like.
I think I was a pretty nice young man, but I think I was, you know, it was...
Saying terrible things in your diary.
Yeah. I mean, things that, you know... I wouldn't like to be on Twitter.
Oh, my God. Thank God Twitter wasn't around. Because I was a Jehovah's Witness.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't think... I don't know how much social media they do, but I definitely would have been, like, anti... I mean, I didn't... In my heart, I didn't feel those things. But I knew I had to be, like, anti-abortion and things like that. And I struggled with it in a way. But in another way, you join a cult, and the difficult decision is to join the cult. After that... Every decision is made for you. And that's why people join cults, I think. I mean, I was a teenager. I didn't know what I was doing. But it's true. It's like if you make the very difficult decision of joining a cult, after that, everything gets easier because all decisions are made for you about what you think, what you say, what you do. Any former cult members in? Cheers. Give us a cheer. Any current cult members in?
I'll show you. Rahela Stapa.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, yeah. If I mean, I was a stand-in for Omar Jalili, but if people in any given audience of mine, generally, there will be ex-Jehovah's Witnesses because, you know, they want to feel that connection because obviously I understand their pain. So if this had been advertised with me on the bill, there'd be former Jehovah's Witness in for sure. And so it's disappointing, if I'm honest. Omar Jalili, you can be the former Jehovah's Witness for me tonight. What's your name? Robbie. No, it's Brother Robbie. Brother Robbie, what congregation were you in? Yeah, well, just make up one. Where are you from?
Oxford.
Oxford congregation. Yeah. Oxford North or Oxford South congregation? Sorry?
South.
Oxford South congregation. How long were you a witness?
10 years.
10 years. Were you just? Are you disfellowshipped? Are you shunned now?
Shunned.
Shunned. Completely shunned. By friends and family. Yeah, 100%. What were you disfellowshipped for, if you don't mind me asking? Could be anything as innocent as putting up a Christmas tree or anything as non-innocent as murder.
Homosexuality is the honest answer.
Thank you, Brother Robbie. You would very much be shunned for that. Big round of applause for Brother Robbie. Very brave.
I think she's just indoctrinated you into the Jehovah's Witness. She's still working for them undercover. She's got another one. That's true. Sounds good, doesn't it? Sounds all right.
He's left again. I got him in and out very quickly.
Yeah, well, I think we've said this before, but like all these, you know, all these little groups, they are sort of, there's a cult element to a podcast audience. Cult element to a group on Twitter. So
everything I've ever started is a bit like a cult. Yeah. If I'm completely honest. I think if you've been in a cult, it's very easy to accidentally start one.
Yeah.
I've got it in my DNA. I just start them all the time, and I try not to, but it's very difficult.
But it's nice to start a cult that's. Hopefully
it's
doing
lovely.
The right thing. You know, I suppose they all cults think that, don't they?
Yeah.
They think I'm doing this for the right reasons.
Yeah. I think I said to you, backstage, I just did ayahuasca and I had a massive freak out when I was up there that I was in a cult. When I was up the mountain. I'll tell you about it in a bit when you ask me about it. But
yeah, let's talk about it. I was going to talk because you do mention this in one of the recent Guilty Feminists. So you went to Peru, is it?
No, I went to Spain. I didn't. Okay. I have to say, the shaman was from Peru.
Right.
But you can go to Peru to work with him, or you can go to Spain and he'll come to Peru. But we all said, all the 15 people I was up this mountain with, 15 total strangers. We all said, thank God we're not in the Amazon on top of this intensity, like worrying about snakes. Like, can you imagine? Worrying about like mosquitoes and, you know, hot weather. And thank God we're doing it in a privileged Western way, up a lovely Spanish mountain in very mild weather, we said to each other.
So for the people like me who have not had shamanistic experiences or many drugs, I've had magic mushrooms. So
yes.
That's the closest.
You've not done drugs, but again, you were young in the 80s.
I know, but I was very...
You didn't smoke dope or...?
No, not really.
No?
I've had some, but not really. I didn't really like it.
No ecstasy jumping out of raves in the 90s?
I think I've had, not in the 90s, I had half a tab of ecstasy in about 2005.
Very specific.
And I know, but I know how many, you know, I've had about cocaine about three times, but again, when I was in my 30s.
Wow.
I wouldn't do it when I was young because I was scared of affecting my brain. So let's see how it's gone for you.
Well, do you know, I didn't want to do psychedelics for the same reason, because literally my only skill is, I don't know, is that literal? I think it is. It's virtually, it feels literal. My only skill is the speed of my brain. That's all I've got. And every single thing I can do is based on the speed of my brain, the way that I can kind of mind map or make a connection or throw something out here or pick something up there. So I do the podcast, I do stand-up comedy, I do... I speak in the corporate world to people about diversity and inclusion, and it's all about a fast brain. And I just thought, what if I have one psychedelic experience that slows my brain down even a little bit and I can't do this job anymore, because I don't know how I'd go working in a shop now, if I'm honest. I don't think I'd be very good at it. I think I'd be numpty. I don't think I could work in a cafe. I'm terrible in an office. Rubbish. So what would I do? I've got a lot of life left, Richard.
Yeah, well, it's a risk. So what made you decide to give this a go?
Well...
And how does it work?
I'm talking about it in my current stand-up show, which is at the Soho Theatre in April, 2 weeks. Come and see me in the basement. It's not a cult. And the show is called The Guilty Feminist Stands Up. And in that, I talk about opening my marriage and exploring my bisexuality, and also about taking... magic mushrooms, but I did a medicinal dose with a therapist. I've never like been at a festival and wanted to do mushrooms or anything like that. I was always too nervous of it, but this guy was a proper therapist. In the show, he's called Lars because that's a Dutch name, and in the show we're calling it Amsterdam, where I did the mushrooms, where I did the truffles, which were the mushrooms, which we're calling truffles, because that's what's legal to do in Amsterdam. Of course, I'm not acknowledging that I did it in a seaside town in Britain where I'm not allowed to do it. Okay. So it's, if you come along and see this, you will see the legal version. Now, if you are from law enforcement, all of this is comedy. All of this is a joke. It's a story. It's made up. It's fiction. If you're not from law enforcement, it actually happened. And I'm saying Amsterdam for my own reasons. So I did those mushrooms first, and I did it because... this 2 years in lockdown, Richard, has really changed my life.
Yes,
I know. Oh, my God.
I worry, thinking about you in lockdown, I think, you know, because you're so in, you know, you're so social and out there and doing stuff.
I am.
And always busy.
I'm here, I'm there, I'm every fucking where. I'm Roy Kent.
Yeah.
I'm no Ted Lasso fans in, clearly. I was, you know, touring, and I'm in Australia, and I'm going to a show in New York, and I'm going to go and do this conference here, and blah, blah, blah. And... when you're living like that, you don't have time to face your demons. You're too busy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting on a plane. Why would I be thinking about what's going on inside of me? And in that 2 years of lockdown, is this too serious for your show?
No, it's great.
You sure?
Yeah.
I mean, I know Stephen Fry cried on your show, but I don't have his status. I don't know. These people have come for laughs. I'll get to the laughs in a minute. In that 2 years of lockdown, I had to face my demons. I had to look in the mirror and go, here are some things that don't quite work. And because I'd been adopted at 10 days old, and the first 10 days in the hospital, I was completely alone, except for the nurses. I'm not, I wasn't just left alone under a bush. But I didn't have a main carer. Like I had, you know, whichever nurse was on shift feeding me. And I discovered in lockdown by doing some talk therapy, which I'd always before eschewed because I thought, sitting around talking about my problems, to frankly, in my experience, a very wealthy, disinterested woman in North London who charged me a fortune. Like this happened twice when I was feeling really down. I went for 6 weeks of therapy twice in my life. And both times, it was a very judgmental North London woman who was very cross if I was 5 minutes early and very cross if I was 5 minutes late. And that didn't make me feel any better about myself at all. And then I would sit and tell her I'm feeling this, this, and this. And at one point I was really having a crisis and going, I don't know what I'm doing with my life or my career, and I wasn't making any money. And she would be like, well, this is my home. And it was, you know, she had a Ferrari in the garage. I think, you know, it was all just dispiriting. The whole thing was dispiriting. I said this once on The Guilty Feminist. It went down very well with the therapists. they explained to me that this wasn't good therapy and it wasn't right for me and I hadn't found the right connection and it was like dating and I had to find the right one. I was like, fucking, I don't have time for that. Jesus, I have to go on a Hinge for a therapist. Fuck off. But I discovered in lockdown, because we're all on Zoom, right? You don't have to be in the room with anyone. I realized I could have a New York analyst.
Of course.
Yeah. And I was like, you want ice? You go to Iceland. You want therapy? You go to New York, right? So I found this woman in New York, and she confirmed what other therapists had tried to tell me that I hadn't listened to, which is that first 10 days does affect you. And while you cannot remember, you cannot recall, you can remember. The body remembers that time. And I then started watching lectures about it. And when you come out, your brain goes into fight or flight because you're taken from your carer and you're taken from your mother. Mm. So here's the thing. While your brain is in fight or flight, newborn babies are notoriously shit at fighting and fleeing due to very useless arms and legs. Not to rag on babies, but...
Yeah, no, they're pricks.
Listen, some of them are. Some of them are lovely, but they're all bad at poor at fighting and fleeing. So then your brain goes into, gotta fight, gotta flee, and your arms are like... poop, poop, poop. And so your breathing is agitated and all of that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But that part I only discovered about the breathing up the mountain when I had a chat to Mother Ayahuasca. True story. So also when I left the cult... You know, Brother Robin and I both know. When I left the cult, I was shunned, and that really replicated being adopted, being given away, being relinquished. So I needed to figure it the fuck out. And some things, especially if they're pre-verbal and pre-personality, you can talk at it all day long. But I think talk therapy is great for discovering why, but then sometimes you need more. Because, like, if I break my arm and I don't instantly... know why, and then I go, oh my god, I ran up the stairs and I fell over and I just kept going, and then I came back and was going, oh, my arm's really sore, and I just forgot, but someone reminded me, no, you fell up arm, I figured it out, fell up the stairs, you're healed now. That's what talk therapy can feel like. It's like, yeah, but I'm still broken, I still need a cast. No, heal yourself, you know why. That's good enough. And that's sometimes a therapist, they'll go, but that's because your mum always did that, and you go, mm-hmm. Yeah. Still get that same feeling, though. And so psychedelics, especially if something's pre-verbal, pre-personality, can take you into the part of your brain that you need to talk to communicate and sort it all out. And they say it's like turning a laptop on and off again, like you rewire.
Right. So do you think it worked in that sense, do you think, or is it a process by which you'll keep doing it?
The first ceremony that I did, and... you're up a mountain, you're with a Peruvian shaman, some other people running the retreat. You lie on a mattress in the dark, in the pitch black. You take a drink first in the candlelight, then you lie back down on your mattress in the dark. And you have this experience. Well, for me, I had this experience. Everyone has a different experience. Everyone I've talked to found it very healing. And the whole group I was in, all on the WhatsApp afterwards, found it very healing. But I can only speak to my own experience. Psychedelics are very personal. It was the most remarkable experience of my life. And at the end of that, I guess it was like 3 hours long, I came out and I was like, that is healed. That is never coming back. And I was like 100% sure. And I've been back a couple of months now and it's healed. I'll have experiences where I'm triggered by something. And normally I would be, and I just feel calm and peaceful and no pain at all. And just like, oh, it's... miraculous. It's miraculous. Unbelievable.
Because someone told... I've got aphantasia, so I can't see any mental images in the traditional way. So if I close my eyes, I can't see anything. But someone said psychedelic drugs is a good way to overcome that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And listen, psychedelics, just to be clear, I'm not advocating psychedelics for everyone. Don't run out and go, oh, I've got to immediately just knock back some psychedelics. Please don't do that. Say... no to drugs, kids, and stay in school. But if you are going to treat it as a medicine and you're going to go, if you feel the call, if what I'm saying, they say you get the call. I got the call because my friend called me and said, Deborah, you got to do this. And she said, but don't do it now. You're going to get the call. I said, Sarah, this is the call. It's a literal, you've literally called me. She said, no, it's going to be more spiritual than that. You're going to feel the call. She said, the opportunity to do ayahuasca is just going to come up in your life and you'll get the call. And you know it did, because I Googled it and found out where a retreat was and went there.
Okay.
And she was 100% right. I got the call. But I'd done a lot of work before, and I think it's not a silver bullet. It's a silver invitation, for sure. My first ceremony, I'd done all the work before because that just, that was healed. My second ceremony, I needed to do the work after because it was a deeper thing I hadn't really tapped into yet. And the third ceremony, I can't explain what I saw. It was beyond anything I expected to see. But it was, and I don't want to mock this at all because it was like seeing the divine and being connected to something super primal. But I did say to the people who ran the retreat, I did say, I didn't ask for that. That was so intense. I said, you need to put that on the website, that it's possible to be connected with the divine and have an experience. You might see things you don't know that you want to see. Like, I was like, I came for a little like trauma healing. I did not expect this. And I was like, what do I do with this information now? And the guy who ran it just said, enjoy the rest of your life. And I was like, be a cult, tell me more, like invite me back. And he was like, you're free to go. I was like, I prefer the cult model where you look after me.
Do you know which God is the real one from that? Can you tell us which one to worship?
And it's sort of not like that. No. It's more primal than that. But I will tell you, I had some funny conversations with Mother Ayahuasca, very funny conversations.
Right.
At one point, I was feeling my body, thinking about, like, one of my intentions. You set an intention, so you might go, you know, I want to get right with the 80s, you know, I want to let the trauma of the 80s go.
I'm cool with it.
Okay. can you imagine an intention you might have, like, anything from your past that you might want to, I don't want to put you on the spot here, Richard, you don't have to say, but could you even imagine maybe not telling us or telling us?
I'm sure there's some stuff in there that I could deal with, yeah.
Yeah, okay, so you set your intention.
Yeah.
Let's imagine it's putting to rest the trauma of every International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Okay. So you go with that intention and you then give that to Mother Ayahuasca. And Mother Ayahuasca can appear to you as a woman, as a literal woman. It's not, when I say this, sometimes people say, oh, you mean like the shaman? And I'm like, no. It's a woman you hallucinate who represents Mother Earth. I mean, it sounds weird. Should I not be talking about this? Are people going to be like, Deborah's lost it?
Definitely, yeah, but that doesn't mean you shouldn't talk about it.
Oh, no, I know. I take it back.
I mean, people will say that because people will say that about any experience like this.
It's absolutely amazing. But there was one experience I had when I was quite deep in this. I don't want to call it a trip because that sounds like drugs and it is a medicine. It's not. Drugs makes things clouded and drugs can take you away from your real emotions. So if you're feeling sad and you go and do some ecstasy, it can elevate your mood, or you're feeling ordinary and you're at a festival and you want to really feel in the hypey mode and forget the fact you have to sleep in a tent. You take the ecstasy and then you're like, oh, I feel really amazing. Oh my God, I'm so connected to you. Oh, let me just touch your shirt. Oh, you're amazing, Richard Herring. That's what ecstasy can do. But it's really stopping, it's blocking my real feelings, which is I'm at this festival, I'm feeling a bit low at the moment, or I'm feeling a bit disconnected, I'm feeling a bit worried about the world. You're fine, Richard. I don't love you excessively or want to touch you. No. Ecstasy. You're a lovely man. You're a lovely man. I love Richard Herring. Don't get me wrong. But if I took some ecstasy now, I would think I loved him more than I did. And I would, you know, want to stroke him. So what drugs do is they heighten or they block your real emotion and they replace it with a fake emotion. Like, I'm overly confident because I've done cocaine. And my personal theory on drugs is people take the wrong drugs. I'm not against drugs, but I think people take the drugs that are in line or intensify their natural personality. So, like, hippies drop out, then smoke a lot of dope and drop out further, whereas stockbrokers buy and sell too much stuff and then take a load of cocaine and buy and sell so much stuff they explode a bank. And in my opinion, stockbrokers should take a joint and chill the fuck out. And hippies should have a line and get a fucking job. But you tell people that and they don't want to hear it. No one wants to hear it. No one wants to hear the wisdom. But I knew that before I went up the mountain. This is medicine, Richard. This is medicine.
Okay.
The reason it's not a drug is it doesn't cloud your emotion and put you in an artificial state. It heightens your clarity. And it puts you in the most heightened, connected state so you can see the truth. And, or at least it did that for me. And again, that's a very personal thing. You have to absolutely know where you're going. You have to know who you're doing it with, that you're supported, and that you really want to do it. If it doesn't sound like your thing, don't do it. I had this very funny conversation where I was feeling my thighs, and as a feminist, I know I love all of my body all of the time, and I'm just very body positive. However, the truth is, gang, there are times I don't like my thighs. I think they're too big, and I try and fight that feeling because, obviously, feminism. But I was feeling my thighs under the blanket in the pitch black in this heightened state. And Mother Ayahuasca said to me, if you hate your thighs, you hate me, because I am you and you are me. You're made of the earth. And then I put my hand on my belly and she said, a woman's belly needs to be rounder than a man's belly, because for within it she contains the whole earth. And I said, Mother Earth, are you being trans exclusionary? And she said, no, it's a metaphor in that voice. And I said, Mother Ayahuasca, are trans women women? And she said, yes, trans people are the most sacred people on earth, because within them they contain both the tobacco and the ayahuasca, the masculine and the feminine. And I thought she was avoiding the question. And I was suspicious. I wasn't like asking her to prove it. I was like, what's going on here? So I just said, are trans women women? And she went, yes, everyone knows who they are. And they will tell you if you will just listen. And I really wish I'd asked about competitive sports now. What a golden opportunity. I was talking to Mother Earth, and I didn't ask. We moved on. The shaman finished his Icaro. So the shaman's singing a song, and sometimes when they finish the song, the chapter ends of that part of the experience, and you go into another chapter. And then we moved on to something else. But if I went back, I'd ask more questions, because I feel like I was there talking to Mother Earth. And at one point, I got this absolute fear on. Actually, I just felt this love, like I'd never experienced love before, and beauty like I'd never experienced before. And then I heard the man on the mattress next to me vomiting, and I heard all of these people, because you purge. And I was having this blissful experience, and I felt this water here, and I licked it like that, and it was tasted salty, and it was as real as if I dipped my hand in that water. It was so real. And I said, what is this? Like, it's like tears. And she said, no, that's your third eye opening. I shouldn't be telling this. Can you cut this out? People are going to think I'm insane. But it's really what happened. And then I suddenly heard men vomiting around me, and I just went, oh my God, I'm in a cult. Oh my God. I saw these psychedelic images. You know, there's those kaleidoscopes.
Yeah.
And I went, oh my God, I'm in a cult. I'm in a cult. I'm in a cult. I am in a doomsday. I'm in a Jonestown cult. I've literally drunk the Kool-Aid of my own volition. And my conscience went, you're not in a cult. You've paid to be here. And I was like, do you not know anything about cults? Of course I've fucking paid to be here. That's how cults work. 101 cult, you pay to be there. They want your money. And then my conscience was like, yeah, but you're leaving on Sunday. You're not in a cult. You can leave. You can leave anytime you want, but you're leaving on Sunday. Well, how do we know? How do we know? That's what they've said. That's what they've said. What if they say on Sunday, oh, the car's broken down? What if... you can leave right now if you want. I said, I can't leave this room, because they have a rule before the end of the ceremony. They just don't want loads of people on ayahuasca wandering around falling into ditches. Totally right thing to do. Totally fair enough. The absolute right thing to do. But in that moment, I was like, you can't leave this room. That's a cult. That's a cult. And then my conscience went, but yesterday, the last ceremony, you got so much healing and peace, didn't you? And I went, yeah, that's not like a cult. That's true. That's not like a cult. And then Mother Earth said... that's why she can come, meaning my conscience. And I said, to be fair, Mother Ayahuasca, I've had a great track record with cults. And she laughed, and I was surprised. And she said, why are you surprised that I have a sense of humour? I am the earth. You are from me. If you have a sense of humour, where do you think you got it? And I thought, okay, fair enough. I'm not in a cult. And I can see now in the cold light of day that Mother Earth telling me she has a sense of humour isn't the greatest evidence in the world that I'm not in a cult. But at the time, it really seemed cast iron. Anyway, I can't recommend you just run off and do... it is amazing and it is healing. But I can't recommend you do it unless you really want to do it. And the only place that I can recommend, and I only say this because I just don't feel safe with people going online, is a place I went called APL Shamanic Journeys. And you can go on their website... and I loved my shaman, was called Anail. He was from Peru, and that's all I can recommend. I'm not in a cult. But that's what I can recommend. And it was incredible, absolutely incredible. And I do feel much healed, Richard.
Well, I'm glad that it's worked for you. It's, you know, I don't think it's for me. But, you know, like...
No, it isn't.
But I think but a lot of things you were saying, I think, you know, it's... you know, I think you can experience things in life. I mean, I think, like, going through an illness last year sort of completely changed my perspective on stuff, like, in a really positive way. So, like, losing something and thinking about what I wanted in that moment. So, it's, you know, it's... You can get to these places in different ways, I think is what I'm saying.
Oh, 100%.
But I think my perspective of who I needed to be and what I needed to do completely shifted last year.
100%. Yeah. There are all sorts of epoch-making things in our life.
Yeah.
People can get there with meditation. I don't think you need psychedelics. If it doesn't appeal to you, you can absolutely get there with meditation. I think for me, I did need it because the things I was unlocking were pre-verbal and pre-personality. And I saw, like, parts of my life, because it activates your memory center, ayahuasca, and I could remember, like, the geography of my house from when I was very small, and then we moved when I was a toddler. And I checked in with my family, and I was right about the geography of the house that I saw. And it does, that doesn't surprise me, because they know if you put a brain under an MRI machine that's had ayahuasca, they know it activates your memory center and also your epiphany center. You can have these little epiphanets. But even after you've done it, you keep having these epiphanets.
Yeah.
But it does. You don't need to do it. You can do. There's so many other ways of getting in touch. And I think exactly what you've talked about, like having a big medical emergency that makes you look at your mortality in a different way, can absolutely give you the same perspective.
Yeah, and you know, I think you've had an unusually, you know, difficult life in the things you're talking about. You know, an unusually eventful and a lot of things for you to cope with psychologically. That this sounds like it's been the right thing for you. So
I mean, for a middle-class white lady, sure.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a Western, you know, I've had a lot of remarkable things happen given my privilege. There is people in the world who would look at my life and just be like, fuck me, she's had an easy ride.
Well, of course, but that's true. That's true of anyone from any direction. We can always find someone who's had a more difficult life.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast. Alongside my good friend, John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I mean, obviously, you've got your return to stand up, and you're talking about, you know, you're talking very openly as you do in the podcast about your life and now having an open marriage, which is interesting. I mean, I was thinking about it, and for me, I don't think it's a good idea because the interest would be all for one member of the relationship, which is not me. I'm not sure it would be. I mean, I don't want to have an open relationship. Because I'm too old for that anyway. But I also don't want my wife to go off and fuck loads of people and I don't get any. Which is what would happen, innit? I mean, you've seen her, haven't you, Andy? Yeah. I mean, you don't have to sugarcoat it for me, mate.
She's a very beautiful woman.
She is.
And if you ever do open your marriage, please let me know so I can ask Katie out.
Okay, that's fine. She might be up for it. I mean, I like imagining it, but I don't want it to happen.
I was, the tricky thing was asking my husband. I decided I wanted to do it. I went to New York, and I ended up. What happened was I ended up. The reason I opened my marriage is I'd wanted to do it for various reasons, but I ended up at an underwear party on Fire Island. And have you been to Fire Island?
No, not been anywhere.
Do you know Fire Island?
No.
It's an island off Manhattan where the gay men, the fabulous gay men of Manhattan, go for the summer or summer jaunts.
Yeah.
And it's just really a strip of sand with it's as probably about as wide as this theatre, but there's like cottages up and down, like beach houses, and there's no roads, there's no street lighting or anything like that. It's just beach houses and then a couple of nightclubs that look like school halls, and lots of booze and fun. I ended up dancing in my pants with Alan Cumming, funnily enough, at an underwear party. And that night, I met some gay men who explained to me that the difference between married and buried, as they referred to it, and said, you can be in an emotionally monogamous marriage and then set some ground rules. And, just because you love each other doesn't mean you have to bore each other, mm-hmm. doesn't mean you have to stop each other being happy. And that was a new concept. Monogamy has, I think, really taken off in a way that's having a moment. I can feel the tension in the audience. It feels like people start to panic and they start clutching their partner like they're a handbag in a crowded marketplace. Like, don't worry.
None of these people have partners. It's fine.
If you love monogamy and that works for you, then that's disappointing for you. But there's nothing you can do about it. You can't catch it. You can't catch an open relationship. But the tricky thing was asking my husband when I came back going, okay, this is what I want. So I thought I'll WhatsApp him because I thought then he can always say lol if he doesn't want to. And if he doesn't say lol and he goes, what do you mean? And starts to get upset, I can say lol. Do you know what I mean?
True.
And I can then just send loads of emojis laughing and going, oh, it's so hard to read tone on WhatsApp. That's the way you should ask. That's my only tip for you. Any difficult question that you think, how are they going to take it? All you do is you WhatsApp it, and then they can say lol. And if they don't, you can say lol. Like, can I date your mum? Lol. Can I have your dog? Lol. Do you see how it works? Can I invite you home, Robin? Lol. Is your name still Robin? Robbie, like Williams. Have I called you Robin a couple of times? I think I did a mnemonic of Robbie Williams and ended up with Robin Williams in my head. So that's my nickname for you. Anyway, that's what I talk about it in my show. Sure. But it's not a threatening show, just to be clear. I don't want you to come along and think, oh, my God, if I come to this show, my marriage will automatically open. It won't.
So your husband was okay about it, or was it...
My husband's an amazing man.
He is an amazing man.
Oh, he really is. He said to me, well, the worst thing about that was, it was really terrible. I didn't just throw it in his WhatsApp. I waited for an appropriate bit of banter. We're having some bants. And then I said, how about no relationship? And I fucking kid you not, this is true. The next thing I heard was his key in the door. And he hadn't read the message. And I was like, oh, my God, oh, my God, oh, my God. He's going to come and read it in front of me. He's going to come and sit next to me and read it in front of me. And I was really in a panic. Anyway, he came in and he sat down and he said, so you want an open relationship, do you? He'd read the notification. And I said, lol. And he then said, look, I'm going to say to you now what I said to you at the beginning of our marriage. If this marriage ever makes you less than you are or less than you could be, you should leave it. Because a marriage is meant to be, a relationship is meant to be an anchor and a nest, a place you can come home safely to, so that you can fly free and experiment. And, if everything goes wrong, you've got somewhere to come home to, and this is a safe place. If it's just, if you just anchored and nested and you're not using it as a safe base, what's it for? And he said, I know it's not about me and it's not about us. It's about you and your fucked up adolescence. So off you go. And I just thought that was so lovely. And that's why I will never leave him. I'll never leave him because he is just such an incredible man like that. I was talking to someone yesterday about how someone ripped me off. Ripped me off. That's an awful thing. Someone who was a... Have you ever heard of the Tinder swindler? Yeah. Yeah, not him. Someone I met told me a story about that they were very ill.
Right.
And they needed money. And I gave them that money. And then it turned out, didn't know them very well. And there were a few red flags, but I didn't listen to those. And then someone else contacted me, and this person was texting everyone all of these different stories, and we all compared texts, and she was just, this is how she was getting by lying and taking people's money. And I told Tom, and I said, I'm really sorry, but I have given 600 quid away that I don't think we're going to get back. And this person is a con artist, and I'm sorry, I've given our money away. And Tom said, well, I hope we've learnt nothing from this. Isn't that lovely?
Yeah.
He was like, I hope next time someone says, I'm ill and I need some money, we don't look back on that. We don't start thinking everyone who says they're ill and needs money is a liar and a con artist. And also, I felt sorry for this person because I thought they clearly had issues and, mm-hmm. you know, this wasn't the way that they wanted to live their life, I'm sure. But it was just a lovely response, and I think he's just a lovely man, and that it can make you stronger. It can make you stronger. But again, it's not for everyone. Psychedelics and open relationships, not for everyone. Not for hardly anyone. Probably lots of people here are going, no.
I think it's interesting that the world is adapting and changing. You know, like, I mean, I lived in an open relationship for the first 40 years of my life, and that most of the relationships I had were sort of open, without necessarily the other person knowing all the time. Or I was just, you know, not going out with people, you know. So I was seeing different people. I was fairly good in relationships, to be fair, but not always. But, you know, I think it's, you know, when you think about parents' generation, that it was sort of so set that you had to be in these couples and it had to be these kind of people.
And it had to be for life.
You know, it had to be for life. And, you know, that can work for some people. It's worked for my parents, I think, but it doesn't work for most people. Or a lot of people it doesn't work for. So it's, you know, it's good that people can be whoever they want to be. And I suppose a lot of it is sort of the bisexual element of your life as well, which has obviously come to the fore as well. So that sort of changes.
Yeah. And I haven't done loads, honestly. No. I haven't really taken advantage of this open door policy, partly because I had a really incredible experience and thought, my God, this is going to be... I was on Broad, and I think it's easier on tour, isn't it? Because you're kind of away from your nest and your local community. And I was like, I was on tour and I had this incredible experience, my first experience with a woman, and I was like, wow, this is going to be my year of sapphic exploration and fulfillment. And I landed back at Heathrow on the 1st of March 2020 and truly believe that I brought the pandemic on with sapphic hubris. But I haven't done a lot about it, to be honest, but just knowing I can, if that opportunity arises, and sometimes exploring that, I just don't want to be on my deathbed going, maybe I was bisexual.
Yeah.
And I didn't explore that. And how is that a threat to my husband? You know, it's not. Like, we've been together so long, like, it's not, I don't think it's not, it doesn't feel like a threat, as long as I name it and say, this is, are you cool with that? And if he'd said, no, I'm not cool with it, I'd be like, well, I'm not going to ditch our marriage over it. But I thought if he is open to it, then that would be like a great thing to explore.
Yeah, well, it's definitely true as well that I think a relationship, you know, there's a lot of relationships that aren't honest. there's a lot of people having affairs or wishing they were having affairs and don't talk about it. So, like, just talking about it is always a good thing, I think, whatever the result and whatever you decide, because it's a relationship's got to have honesty at its heart.
Yes.
Most of the time, don't always tell the truth, because there's some things you should lie about. But, like, you know, if they say, is this, do I look, no, I won't say anything, but not about having good affairs with
people. Is this dress just about to walk out the door? Is this dress okay? And you think it's not my favourite, but they're just about to walk out the door to go to a wedding, and it's not good to undermine their confidence and go, you look better in the blue one.
Or just, I don't care. Which, they both look okay to me, I don't care.
No, that's not a good thing to say. No. So you're better off saying, you look amazing, I love that dress.
Yeah.
Yeah, really, really suits you.
Yeah.
Because you want to give that person confidence, even if, Richard, and I can't imagine you don't care, but even if on there was one day where you didn't care, you'd be like,
well, I love my wife so much, it doesn't matter what she's wearing or what her hair looks like. She's wonderful.
She would hear that as backhanded, wouldn't she? She'd immediately go, what do you mean, doesn't matter what I look like or what my hair looks like? What's wrong with my hair?
Oh, yeah, she'd managed to turn anything into... You know what they're like, those women.
Are you reading from your 1980s diary there? 1982, Richard Herring gets out of bed.
But I wouldn't have known what they were like in 1982 as I'd not spent any time with any women or probably even really kissed anyone by that stage. So I'd like to think I was an expert. Well, that's all kind of incredibly interesting stuff. But it's obviously been... So we last spoke in about 2018 when we did the crossover episode, or 2019. So it's kind of all happened during the lockdown or post-lockdown.
I opened my relationship before the lockdown,
was it?
But
yeah, just
all of the psychedelics was, when we came out, because I just had realised in lockdown that I just needed to do something to process those things that had happened, because I was blocking myself. I was just blocking myself on all sorts of things. And I just didn't know why I was blocking myself. Does anyone ever do things where you go, why am I doing this? I know this doesn't make me happy, and yet I'm doing it again. Oh, still doing it, still doing it. And does anyone else have that, or is that just me? Just cheer if you have that. Yeah, cheer if you get in your own way. And you can't figure out why. Yeah, that was me. And then I was like, okay, this lockdown period has forced me to look at that. Because I think before I could always blame others and the world. I could always be like, well, it's because I'm in so many airports, or it's because I'm, you know, it's very difficult to keep up routines that are good for me when I'm doing this or doing that. There was always someone else to blame. When you are trapped in your house morning, noon and night, and you were only legally allowed to go for one walk, and that actually bonded my husband and me, because we realised if we had a row, we could only legally storm out once a day. And then you're stuck with it. So then we were like, okay, we better be kind to each other, because otherwise we're going to be like fuming and then both have to be here. I think in that time I was like, okay, if I'm not doing the things that I say would make me happy now, when nobody else is controlling my time, I was working very hard, I had writing deadlines and stuff, but no one else is controlling my time. This isn't the fault of an airport or because, oh, well, I, did this or that. This is me now. This is me getting in my own way. How do I get out of my own way? So I did a bunch of therapy and figured out, when my friend called me, I went, yeah, that's what I need. I got the call. And I never, I was such a rationalist, Richard, before this. I only believed in things I could knock on, which was ironic for a Jehovah's Witness. But I did. I if you couldn't prove it to me, the sexiest thing a man could say to me was prove it. Absolutely prove it. I didn't believe in any of this stuff. And I don't know what it is. But what I do know is, if you're going to approach it from a scientific point of view, there is neuroscience in. We're 50 years behind in psychedelics research because of Nixon's war on drugs. And someone in the White House at the time said, the conversations were specifically had, we cannot arrest people for being African-American and we cannot arrest people for being against the Vietnam War. But what do those two communities have in common? We can go after them. We can make this big song and dance about drugs, drugs, drugs. They're the enemy. They're going to steal your children, yada, yada, yada. So psychedelics were becoming big in the 60s. And they knew then they can heal depression, they can cure addiction, they can heal post-traumatic stress disorder. And they've got to be done well and in the right way and as a medicine, and not just, I'm not just talking about taking some mushrooms at a festival and seeing the face of God in a kitten as a child. Like, it's not that. They've got to be done properly. And I'm not sure they work for everyone and as quickly as they've worked for me. I'm not saying that, but we know that there are healing properties. And Nixon's war on drugs killed it, so we're 50 years behind. And that does make me angry. But then I said to my husband, but why would the pharmaceuticals industry not get on this? Because they would just rebrand. I mean, they're so powerful, their lobby in America. They can get whatever they want. And then I thought about it, and I thought, if someone's got PTSD and that can be healed in 1 to 3 sessions, why would the pharmaceuticals industry not want that when they can sell you a pill every day of your life for the rest of your life? But there's a lot of research being done now, and my talk therapist, my analyst that I have now in New York, she said in New York at the universities there's whole departments devoted to it, and quite soon psychedelics will be available with therapists and MDMA for couples counseling and to open up people with PTSD and therapy, microdosing. But if you listen to, I just did a Guilty Feminist with Hannah Gadsby, and she talked about microdosing with MDMA for Nanette, that's how she wrote Nanette, her big, amazing show.
Well, you know, I think if it works for you, that's good. I'm not going to encourage my listeners to take drugs.
No, they shouldn't. They shouldn't take drugs, Richard.
And I think, you know, the problem with psychedelics seems to be that, you know, I mean, I've seen a lot of comedians, and these are people just wildly taking drugs, which is not what you're doing.
No.
But it does, you know, you suddenly see them 20 years later and they're talking like insane stuff, which I don't think this is, by the way.
Does it sound insane?
I don't think it's insane. It's like connection with nature and spirituality, and that's fine. And, you can do that.
And your own parts of your brain you can't contact any other way where you can have the conversation with yourself. And,
yeah, you but know. It's when you start, you know, thinking that Bill Gates is putting robots in your bloodstream and that sort of stuff. But I think a lot of people who've taken...
Oh, he is.
Yeah, he's definitely doing it. When it's thinking it's the problem, because the robot should stop you thinking that, right?
Does this sound... Can I just get a... If you think this sound... Do I sound very odd now, like you used to sound like a completely rational comedian and now I sound like slash feminist and now I sound... Do I sound a bit insane? Can you just... You have to be honest with me because I need to know if I shouldn't be talking about this stuff on stage. I never talked about... I talk about some of this stuff on my stand-up show, but I'm being more open with Richard because I'm filling in for Omid Jalili and I want it to be less...
Omid was going to talk about this as well. That's why. That's partly. I just gave her the script for Omid.
Exactly. This is Omid's story. Just give us a cheer if you think, oh no, this sounds awful. You shouldn't be talking about this in public. Give us a cheer if you find it interesting. Yeah. Give us a cheer if I should talk about this again. Yeah. Okay. So if you're listening at home and you're thinking, oh no, you're out of step with the audience. At least that.
It's always the kind. You know, I think it's very important to hear people's experiences. It's the kind of thing I think someone will email me and say, "I'm a scientist and I would like to come on and tell you why Deborah Francis White is incorrect about this," which I might then do.
Oh yeah, I mean, but that scientist will not negate my experience.
No, that's why.
My only concern is I'm becoming someone Tim Minchin would hate at a party. That's literally my only concern. I'm like, I am still a rationalist. I think, look, this is what I think. Is we know psychedelics can rewire the brain. We know that. If they're done well, in moderate, don't start just knocking back microdose mushrooms in a field without any supervision. I really don't. Please don't. Please don't. Please don't. Please don't. But neurologically, scientifically, we know that. We know we're behind on the research, but the research is being done now and it's looking favourable. The other thing is, I think... We are so far away from nature and the earth, and we think we're better than it, and we think we're on top of it, and we think we're other than it. We think we will decide how much we pollute the earth and how much we include the earth. We think we are the dominant species, and we're the... Honestly, I think what taking plants can do... And listen, some plants are arsenic. You know, like, it's not as simple as that, but these particular plants can make you feel in touch with something of the earth. And we are from the earth. We are. And we will go back to the earth when we die. And that's made me more of a... I feel more connected to the earth, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think this earth will survive. What we are doing now with climate change is we are creating an excellent environment for creatures that love warm water and drinking straws who can live in that environment. And if we continue to treat the earth like we are, we're just making ourselves extinct. That's okay. This planet will carry on. We'll carry on. And it will rebuild and it will reboot. As Mother Earth said to me while I was under the influence of ayahuasca, I invented self-care. Look at how I restore myself when people damage me. And I do my best, but I can't, you know, I can only self-care as much as I can if you're damaging the earth more quickly than I can restore it. This earth will survive. There will be creatures who at some point in the future might be going, we've got to keep more drinking straws in the ocean because that's our ideal habitat. How do we get more drinking straws in? Do you see what I mean by this?
Yeah, yeah.
This is not a theory like Bill Gates is in my bloodstream, just by the way. This is a metaphor for the future. I think that's what we're doing. I think we're trashing the hotel room.
Yeah, well, we're definitely doing that. And we definitely need to look at that. And I think introspection and talking about stuff is good for everyone, right? So it's how you get there. I'd kind of like you to come back in 10 years' time and tell me how it's all worked out for you.
Are you worried that my brain's going to fry or something?
No, but I think like I think it's like really important. It's exact. All the reasons you're doing everything are exactly right, and you should experience life as much as you can, and you should, you know. I sort of feel it's certainly in my relationship terms. I sort of did all of that, and then you know I'm glad I did it all. If I hadn't done it all, and I was now 54 and had been married for 40 years, I would absolutely 100% be. In exactly the same... I've been sucking cocks behind the bus station.
I was in a cult when I was younger. Yeah, from 14 to mid-20s. So I didn't have any of those normal experiences. Yeah. And then I got married really quickly. Yeah. So I'm Benjamin buttoning my way through life.
Yeah,
Richard.
I think that... And I think that's all good. But I also sort of... I don't know. It'd be interesting to see whether you still... Having gone through it, whether you still think it. And you might do, and I'm not saying you won't. I'm just saying it would be interesting to find out where you are in... 5-10 years with all of this stuff.
I feel like you're hoping.
I'm hoping it'll all go wrong.
Massive disaster.
I'm not. I hope it. Obviously, I hope it go. It works.
I feel like it'll be a more interesting show for you if I slap Chris Rock though.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if I like, I'm like going. The bees have taken over the world. You know, like or whatever.
Yeah, but you can say that you're being rational in the way you're describing all of this, and you're being honest about the way you're describing all of this. So it's, you know, I don't know about the science about psychedelics. I just think like there's a lot of fried brains from people who've, you know, but also from our generation, not from the 60s, from people who just did too much coke and that sort of stuff.
Oh, but
there's a lot of fried brains and a lot of fried clever brains, and so I still have my suspicions about any form of drugs. But I also think, you know, I haven't been through the stuff you've been through.
No, coke's a horrible drunk. And I coke makes people more about themselves.
Yeah.
MDMA makes people more about other people. But both of those are man-made synthetic drugs that are designed to put people in an altered state, not to connect. This is, you know, there's a difference between that and a plant which will give you some clarity. Of course you can misuse anything. And, you know, if I kept taking... If I got now addicted to, like, I have to go up a mountain every 3 months, yeah, at some point. But I don't really have any intention of doing it again, maybe in 3 years or, you know... When I first had that mushroom trip, it was so intense. I said I wouldn't do that again for 10 years. But I got so much clarity from it. It was brilliant. Now I think maybe three. But the great thing, Richard, is what happens after, where you get all this clarity and this... The best stuff is what happens after. And if you disrupt that by doing it again, you won't get all that lovely stuff after. Mm. So, no, I feel so healed. I can't even tell you. I just feel so much better. But, you know, you're right. Maybe I'll come back in 10 years' time and I'll be like, you were completely right. Don't do medicine, kids. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying. But I think it's almost more with the relationship stuff. I think it's... I don't know. There's so many factors at play. If you can make it work, it is fantastic if you can make that work. It's making something like that work for everyone, and everyone's absolutely delighted about it all the time. You know,
I'm not overdoing it, to be honest. No, I'm not overdoing it.
No.
And I'm in a good space with it, and I think Tom is too. And Tom said to me actually recently, he said, I'm really glad we had that conversation because I know someone else whose relationship didn't go well because they didn't have that conversation. And he said, I'm just so glad because it feels like we're really being open and honest. And I think, I think it's good. Do you have any emergency questions for me? I feel I've talked too much about myself.
We'll do a couple of quick emergency questions and then we will wrap up because it's been fascinating, and you know it's all good. Let me ask you this. We're not going to ask you. That one's too philosophical. I've got quite philosophical ones now. If I ask you the one about the chrysalis, we're going to be here all night. If you could own and live in any property in the world.
Yeah.
Which, where would you choose to live if you could live in any...
Oh, own and live in?
Yeah, so they just give you whichever building or property or anything you can live where. Is you've got an ideal place to live?
I might take over the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York.
Okay.
Have some parties in there. Yeah. That'd be fun.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
Is there somewhere to sleep?
They've given it to me. I'll convert a wing.
Okay, for a bed. Are you going to keep all the art as well, though?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be great.
That's quite nice. All right, I'll ask you, this is from my son, and I thought I'd put this to bed, but you might have an answer for this. Do ghosts have bum holes? This is my son's.
I don't think they need them.
No?
No. I think they're more...
Doesn't have to need them, do they?
Ethereal than that.
Yeah, I agree with you about that.
I think I'm going to say no.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good answer.
Is that my last emergency question?
I think it might be.
I have to auction off this cup.
Oh, yeah. Does anyone want to buy a mug?
Okay. Pretend they were a guest. I was a guest on Rilla Histopa. And all I got was this Aussie mug. You are, and if you do this, you also get to be a guest for what was going to be 3 minutes, is now going to be more like 60 seconds, if I'm completely honest. anyone, do we start the bidding at £5? £5 for the mug. Well, how much does the mug retail at? Yes, £5.
I mean, it doesn't retail. It's absolutely, you cannot buy them anyway.
£10, and you can't buy this anywhere. £15, you don't have to be a guest on the show if you don't want to be. You can nominate someone else. You can nominate Robbie if you'd prefer. At £20, £25, £50, £50, £50. It goes to Ukraine. Thank you, £50, £70.
Wow.
All the money's going to go to Ukraine. £70. Did I see your hand over there for £70? The money goes straight to Ukraine, but you get to be a guest on the podcast or nominate a guest on the podcast, and you get this mug. And it's got my lipstick on it, and that ups the ante. Now, yeah. It really shouldn't in COVID times. We can have it washed for you if you'd prefer, but if you like my lipstick, depends. Do you fancy me or not? It's an unknown quantity. What do we have? 70? Did someone say £50? Did someone say £70? Did someone say 70? Our last hand was 50.
Who's?
I thought someone. I thought someone behind.
I think that was 80. I think you said 80.
Did someone? Did anyone say 70? 80. Can we get it up to 100 for Ukraine? £100 for Ukraine. You could chip. You could go in together with somebody. You could go in together.
Share a mug.
Have we got a backup mug? Yes. You're going to say 100. Okay. 120. Do I hear 120? I hear 120. Wow. 150. Do I hear 150? 130. Do I hear 130? Okay. 130. Do I hear 140? No. Okay. So what was your last bid? 120.
Yeah, we're on 130.
And 130. Have we got a second mug? Because then they could both have a mug.
We raise two
lots of money for Ukraine.
God, she's such a...
Okay. So you're...
She's a hustler, this girl.
You're going to get the authentic one that's 130. Just one second. Oh. Do you want it with my water in it? Would you like it washed? You don't have cash. That's all right.
We'll work it out.
PayPal Richard. We'll trust you. But someone needs to just get your details. Could you just tell... I'm sorry, what's your name?
Laura.
Laura, could you just get this gentleman's email / PIN number? Thank you.
And I'll interview
name?
You.
Can you
get the water
come
free
up,
water?
Come up.
I'll interview you. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Just no. Can you come and sit in the chair? Sit in the chair and then I'll take a picture of you and you can say, look, I was your guest. Okay, you sit there.
That's your thing.
Hello, hey, what's your name?
Peter,
hold the microphone and then we can be in the actual podcast.
Wow, there we go.
I mean, you know, I nearly had Andy McCaich on as the guest today anyway, is the way things were going. So I'll ask you an emergency question. Would you prefer a ham hand or an armpit that dispenses sun cream?
This is a difficult question.
It is. You must have thought...
I'm vegetarian.
Okay, but it won't be. So... You're not eating an animal. You're eating your own hand.
Well, and that's always the problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
You don't know how to answer that. But I think with summer coming up...
It's good, isn't he?
It would be the lotion.
She had him on the whole time. The summer coming up is the sun cream.
Definitely.
Yeah. How are you feeling about the 130 quid for the mug?
More pleased than my fiance.
Okay. Yeah.
I looked at her when it got to 80 and she said, no.
Okay. Also, he wants to be in an open relationship. How'd you feel about that?
Thank you. Your time on the show is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And you're 120, okay? Do you want to come up? Have we got time, or do you want to just take it in the seat?
I'll get your mug in the interval.
Get your mug. Do you want to answer an emergency question? Robot sex or dogs that laugh? Dogs that laugh. There we got. We got
bad
an emergency
choice,
question.
Mate, bad choice.
Get your mug in the interval. Thank you very much, Laura. Can you just get this man? Can you just stand up? He'll just wave so she can see you.
Wow.
Can you get his email and his PIN number and his PayPal, something like that?
Amazing.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Deborah Frances White. Amazing.
Thank you.
What an incredible woman. Stick around. You have been listening to Rahul Astapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Deborah Frances White. Thank you to Scant Regard for playing this music. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. I'm indebted to Chris Evans, not that one, who's sitting right beside me. And thank you to all of the team who record the show, even George. And thank you to everyone at the Leicester Square Theatre, who are very nice as well, and everyone at Acast. Also, I would like to thank Kickstarter backers Richie James, Michael Bates, Stephen Sanderson, Graham Bench, Michael Bond, who wrote the Paddington books, Daniel Betts, James at Sit Down Jim, we all know him, Charlie Carrick, Ian Ferry, he invented the ferry, and we have to thank him for that, Peter Fermoy, Robin Broadley, Simon Malpass, David Gibson, Mark Fawcett, Clarty Chimp, Ed Bauer, Alan Doyle, Mark Ellis, Wax Parrot, Karen McKenzie, Adam Jackson, Rob Mossop, Andrew Wildwoods, Stuart Hart, none, Jamie Connolly, none, no. No, they don't want their name. No, Ian Robertson, Ange Weeks, Tink, Barry Fair, Seven Poles. That one's just silly. George Shulcross, and Jason. Thank you very much for your part in all of this. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz on GoFasterStripe.com production. Why not watch the videos of these shows? Go to gfsboxoffice.com. You can still watch them even now. Buy it for a small fee, which will help us make even more podcasts. Thanks very much. Head to rahelasuper.co.uk for more information about everything you could possibly wish for. Goodbye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.